When forming a missionary team, how do you address the concern of including individuals, especially youth, who may not be truly regenerated but are involved in witnessing and evangelizing? Do you have a process or guidance for selecting team members?
Yeah, we don't do short-term mission trips like what they're known to be. So let me give you an example. So I'm in the airport in Lima, and I see all these kids running around really out of order, teenagers, costumes. And then I see they all have the same shirt on, and there's 40 of them, and they've done a mission trip in Peru. None of them speak the language. None of them have read through their Bible, probably, from Genesis to Revelation. None of them have ever read a systematic theology. None of them are trained in any of the matters of evangelism or anything else. They've taken a youth mission trip. Now, for them to get there, I estimated just the flights would be somewhere around $80,000, which could put 10 indigenous pastors on the field preaching 24 hours a day. And so there is no biblical grounds for mission youth trips. No biblical grounds at all. Now, if you have a young person who the elders see, this person is serious, they're reading their Bible, they're interested in missions, yes, something could be done, an exploratory trip for someone like that. But there's no grounds for all this nonsense. None of it. I was out at Grace years ago, and they called me into a conference because there was a mission group that was having some trouble. It was not associated with Grace. It was a mission trip that asked for their a mission group that asked for their advice, and they said, "Brother Washer, could you come in and go over this?" I said, "Okay, what's the problem?" "Well, it's a youth. It does youth missions." I go, "Okay. So what's the issue?" "They have $60 million in the bank." I was just talking with our brother here last night and desperate, trying to think of how do we get missionaries to all of Indonesia, which is just overlooked, really. $60 million to send young people to go paint a church building? Let me share with you what missions is. You need to understand this. First of all, the Great Commission is primarily, principally a theological endeavor. It is about the communication of God's truth to men for the transformation of the individual and the transformation of society. It is theological. It is doctrinal. Another thing, what is a missionary? That's an interesting question, isn't it? Because we use that word all the time. What is a missionary? I was asked to do a big mission conference one year, and all the experts were there, and I turned it down on purpose so that I could make a statement. They said, "Why aren't you here?" I said, "You have 18 missionary experts, and if you were to ask them what is a missionary, you'd get 18 different definitions." What is a missionary? The word missionary comes from the Latin missionarius that was first used in the 16th century by the Jesuits, who were sent by the Catholic Roman Catholicism to the north in order to stop the Reformation. Did you know that? So what is a missionary? The noun missionary comes from the Latin verb mittere, which means to send. Every time you say someone is a missionary, congratulations, you're charismatic because you just called them an apostle in Latin. Missionarius is the Latin translation of apostolos, and mitera, apostelo. So what is a missionary? You say, "Well, Brother Paul, are there apostles?" No and yes. You say, "Well, what do you mean no and yes? You're scaring me now." All right, in the New Testament, we have two kinds of apostles. Two kinds. We have the apostles of Christ, a very limited group of men, and they were extraordinary in this. They were sent out personally by the resurrected Christ. Okay? Secondly, they were, and their band, recipients of divine revelation that brought to us the faith that has once and for all been handed down to the church. Those are the apostles of Christ. But there's two places in the book of Philippians, chapter 2, and also 2 Corinthians 8, where it refers to, in the New American Standard, the messengers of the churches. But that's not what it says. It says the apostles of the churches. The apostles, the sent ones of the churches. Now, you need some historical background on this because, you know, I hear people say, well, you know, an apostle in the, you know, in the Greco-Roman world was someone sent out with authority. Do you really think that Jesus is going to take a term from the Roman Greco world to set up the foundation of his church? No. What you need to understand is the Sanhedrin had apostles. Shaliach, the sent one. And in the Talmud, the rabbis would say this: he who has spoken to Shaliach has spoken to the one who sent him. Does that language sound familiar? Jesus basically said that about himself. He who's heard me has heard the Father. Paul said that about the apostles of Christ. He who's heard us has heard Christ. Okay? Now, so when Jesus, when we have the term apostle, when he was speaking, it was Shaliach, and you need to know this, the Sanhedrin, as well as the larger synagogues, had Shaliach. They had apostles, and they sent them out to carry word from that authority to the smaller synagogues. So now when we understand this, then what is an apostle of the church? Well, let's make a comparison. The apostles of Christ, they were sent out by Christ under his direct authority, and they were recipients of revelation. The apostles of the churches are men who are elder qualified men. And they have been tested and tested and tested. And they are sent out by that church with the authority of that church, and he who has heard that missionary has heard the church that sent him. That is to say, that missionary is carrying the doctrine and ethic and confession of that church and has authority to go out and preach it. That's a missionary in the truest sense of the word. Now, that missionary concept, which I believe is biblical, it's not a model. It's the model. Now, who's to comprise this group of apostles from the churches? Who comprises it? First of all, there are three top men. When you talk about the apostles of the churches, there are three top men. When you go to Ephesians chapter 4, verse 11 through 12, it's the most overlooked passage in the Bible. He says that he has given, we've already dealt with apostles and prophets. So we have evangelists, pastors, and teachers. For what? For the building up of the church. Does he give you any other place in Scripture where it says this is for the building up of the church? No. Evangelists, pastors, and teachers. So wherever in the world that the church is non-existent or the church is weak, it's because the evangelist, pastor, and teacher is not there, or they're there and they're ill-equipped or unqualified. And so when we talk about world missions, what are we supposed to be doing? The churches and the elders of those churches are to be training men. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 2. That's not about the multiplication of disciples there, even though we should do that. That's about the training of leaders in the church. The three top men, the spearhead of world missions, are proclaimers. Not kids, not mercy ministries, not healers. They're proclaimers, evangelists, pastors, and teachers. And all these men must be elder qualified. And within teacher is not only teachers within the church, but men who would be more involved in the academics, teaching Greek, also Bible translators. They all have to do with the proclamation of the word. Now, here's another thing that just rubs me. I mean, it makes me fighting mad. When you no longer have the power of God on your life, you're not bearing fruit, then you've got to get on a soapbox, don't you? And do something. You've got to do something to validate your life. If you go out into the mission world, you're going to find missionaries who are worth their weight in gold. But you're also going to see this little esoteric club of missionaries that, you know, we have this kind of esoteric missionary knowledge, and you Bible-thumping pastors of a local church don't have a clue about what missions is about. That is the most damnable lie out there. How do you plant a church in the most remote and exotic place on the planet? The same way you plant a church in New York City. Now, yes, there are language things, there are cultural things and everything else. But what you need to understand is that we do the Great Commission the same way that a man here in this church. Everything that the man who's, if this is a healthy church, and I've heard by everyone, it's a good church, a healthy church. Everything that the pastors are doing here is the same thing you do to fulfill the Great Commission in the most exotic, remote place on earth. It's all about training evangelists, pastors, and teachers, that they be elder qualified and that they go out under the authority of that church, taking the same doctrine, the same ethic, the same spirit of that church, and planting that church somewhere else. Now, you say, well, can anyone else be a missionary? Yes. And this is what's so beautiful about the idea of a sent one. We all know that that the eldership, and what we would say, evangelist, pastor, and teacher, that is the work of the men in the church. But what about women? Can they be apostles of the churches? Can they be sent ones? Yes. But how? And this is what would instill dignity in women who feel the call to go overseas. My dear friend Matt Glass, okay, he's over in Indonesia with his family. And let's say that they have all these kids and really struggling, and Amanda says, I really need some help for a while. And the church that sent them goes, well, we know some of the women who were just very close to Amanda. And they make, like in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, they make a public call. Is there a woman here who would like to go and assist Amanda for a month and a half and to help her? And remember what happened? Paul made the public call. God put it on Titus's heart, a subjective, real calling. And Titus said, I'll go. So that woman, a woman comes to the elders and says, I will go. I've talked to my husband. He's in agreement. I will go. The elders know that woman. And you guess what? They send her. Not with the authority to act as an evangelist, pastor, and teacher, but with the authority to take care of this specific task. And so it's the same way. So you have, it must, every ministry on the mission field must have its focus in the planting of churches. But while that happens, there may be this open door for a school. And so what do you do? Now we're talking about the fellow laborers of these evangelists, pastors, and teachers. And we say, we've got a guy here who would make an excellent headmaster. He will go and start that church in cooperation with the elder qualified men that we have there. Do you see what I'm saying? It's all focused around that. Now, I know that in the Reformed community, because of Calvin and a few others, people believe there's no such thing as evangelists. But Charles Hodge, Charles Spurgeon, and others would disagree, and so would I. And maybe that's what's wrong with our Reformed movement today, is you don't have anybody preaching on the streets. Let me hit that for a minute for you pastors. I want you to think about something. The work of a pastor Recently, I've been looking at certain really famous pastors, and I've been asking myself, I don't think they're pastors. And people go, why? Well, because they're traveling like 25 weeks out of the year. I'm sorry, I don't care how great of an expositor they are, there's a problem. Because those of you who are pastors, you know one thing, if you're a faithful pastor, it's 24/7, 365 days a year. I mean, it's difficult. Now imagine this. So we have this idea, we have elders, okay? And they're kind of all pastor teachers. But most of the pastors that I talk to, because they're surrounded by Sodom, because their members are so affected, most of the pastors that I know who I really respect, other than doing their sermons, they are pastoring. And they're wore out. And then I talk to them, and most of them will go something, you know, I used to go out and witness on the streets. I used to do all these things. But the sheep, my burden is for them, and I can't even keep up with their needs. What if we looked at this differently? That in the elders, what would happen? And I'm going to make it very, very, I'm going to oversimplify. What if we had a man who he loved to feed his people in the pulpit, and for him, counseling was just expository preaching to one person. And he just ate, slept, thought, dreamt of pastoring. But he knows there's these other things. There's evangelism that ought to be done. What if another elder, instead of thinking of an evangelist as this itinerant that runs all over the place, which there is room for that, what if one of the elders, full-time elder, was the evangelist? Every guest who came into that church, he went after them. I mean, it was his, not he does it and we agree with it. No, it's official. This guy is an evangelist elder. Elder qualified man. He is an elder. He does have something of a pastor's heart, but he is an evangelist. It's his gift. Every guest that comes in that church, he goes after them. Every parent he's talking to, how are your children? How is this? Can I come over? Can I do this? He takes the other. Young men are starting to come to the church and they have that evangelistic zeal. He's taking them out into the streets. He's witnessing with them. Now, sometimes in these bigger church, I'll ask somebody, so what do you do? I'm the pastor of administration. I go, no, you're not. Yes, I am. No, you're not. You're a deacon. You're a deacon. What if we had, now just humor me for a moment, because it may not have to be this way. What if there was a full-time deacon on staff? I mean, and I'm not talking about someone who got called a deacon. I'm talking about a man who's been trained 3 or 4 years in the art of what it means to be a biblical deacon. What if you had a man who literally slept, dreamt, ate, drank service, and then he was able to find all the other men and women in the church, not saying women being deacons, but find all those that have the gift of service. And he organized them. And he was passionate about making sure all this happened at the administration. You know, most pastors can't do the work of pastoring, even though they're sincere, because they're doing the work of a deacon. That's what I'm saying. We're all about these platitudes of all this, you know, big language and all this stuff. And I'm going, hey, let's just look at a few of these things. You know, don't mow the lawn if the house is on fire. Just what would that be like? So that now this pastor who loves the sheep, but he really doesn't have the gift of evangelism. Now he's not walking around condemned all the time that I'm not able to soul win and do this or that. And there's so many balls being dropped because there's a man who that is his gift. These are some of the things that I wish that we would think about. instead of just keep beating the same drum over and over. And so when we talk about missions, another thing about missions, it is an would I let those youth run the church for 2 weeks? Take the pulpit, do everything, do the counseling. I'm certainly not going to send them to the mission field. Why would I send a lesser man to the mission field? If I wouldn't allow him to be an elder in my church, you should not be sending him anywhere. And on the mission field, we need the elder qualified men who are proclaimers. We need, guess what we need? One of Heart Cry's biggest needs right now are deacon qualified men. That means men who can deal with the banking, the legal, all the accounting, to send money to 70 different countries, and hopefully we don't get arrested. Do you see? There's all these gifts that God has given people, and we totally ignore it. Why? Because we got the charismatic prosperity preachers talking about gifts, so we run completely the other direction, and no one in our church even knows what their gift is, and elders aren't helping them. How do you practically get... Do you realize that the evangelist, pastor, and teacher are given for the equipping of the saints? Equipping them how? In their giftings. How much time have you spent helping each member discern their gifting? Because that's a talent, and on the day of judgment, they're going to be held accountable for it. And you're not doing anything. Because you just want to preach like a Puritan. These are things that need to be considered. And they're extraordinarily important. How much burden does the church carry? Not because women are ungodly in the church, but because women have not been instructed in womanhood and the art of the house. Oh, we say, well, we had a conference. Yeah, 3-day conference? That means nothing to me. What about 3 or 4 years of women being instructed and helped? What about fathers? We don't have a youth group. Yeah, and you don't have fathers either who are training the young people because you're not teaching them. Will you throw a book at them? Do you see what I'm saying? There's a lot of holes in what we're doing. And I think I need to be quiet now because I'm probably making a lot of people mad. But it's true. It's true. Another question?